time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you all. It's Tuesday, the 1st of November. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up between now and 8pm, Colin Donnery of FRS Recruitment will be along, because recent reports and even research over the past number of decades has shown that men are slacking behind women on household duties. But the big question is, have new working habits adopted during the pandemic made a difference in these statistics? We'll explore that in more detail with Colin at around 7:30 this evening. John Gagan from Mullingar Chamber will be along too to give some reaction to the planning appeals on the proposed Centre Parks expansion. It was a €100 million expansion planned and it was going to increase the job numbers there by about 300 people. There's some staggering statistics behind that business. So more on that a little bit later on. And we'll also use it as a chance to just check in with John and see what's happening over in Mullingar as they move from post-FLA probably into a big busy Christmas period. So let's see what's happening over there too. And also, are restaurant owners correct in charging for cancelled bookings? So if you make a booking at a restaurant and you genuinely have to cancel it, should you still be paying the full price for that? Well, one Dublin restaurant did that recently and it became quite a media story. It was covered on both social media, on radio and of course in print media too, and it has been a very, very vastly different opinions on it. But later on you're going to hear from a Midlands venue owner, get their opinion on it, because like all these things, there's always a little bit more behind it than just a case of restaurants trying to charge you for something that you didn't have to do. There's much more, so stay tuned. All that is coming up between now and 8. If you'd like to get in touch with me here in the studio, as always, you can do so by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103. That, of course, is powered by the home of Offaly's top-selling car brand, Lambrothers Toyota, on the Arden Road in Tullamore. And tell you who I'd love to hear from this evening. If you know somebody, a colleague, or somebody who has ran the Dublin Marathon at the weekend, send me in a text if you want to get a shout out here and there, because 25,000 people ran the marathon and I seem to across social media see loads of people that I knew, particularly through work circles, that ran it too. So if you know somebody who ran it, drop me a text. I'd be delighted to say hello to them. Or also if you know somebody who's graduated from Athlone today or is due to graduate tomorrow or Thursday from the Technological University of Shannon, you want to give them a shout out live on air here, please get in touch as always, 083 3010 103. But first this evening, I mean, we've just gone through Halloween and I'm not even going to mention the C word yet, but you can already see the shift once the 31st of October passes. That's it. It's all focus on a different season. But of course, the 31st of October is a very significant time of the year for not just children and adults alike, but for accountants, because they all look at that date and the looming deadlines that are coming for tax returns. And the big question, I suppose, is are they all breathing a sigh of relief? Well, let's get the perspective of one accountant, John McCann from MCM Accounting in Tullamore. John, are you relaxed this morning with all your returns done for all your clients?
I sure. I'll tell you one thing, Ronan. I'm actually sitting back here now and I'm in the Speedos and I'm just having a great time. No, to be honest with you, no is the answer.
And I have to say, I was driving through a town in the Midlands on Saturday evening and I saw a person who I know is an accountant going in the door of their office at about 4pm on Saturday, and it just brought home to light the work that, I suppose it's the one time of year you have to work anyway. Is that really what we can take from that?
Well, certainly, it's probably reasonable to say. I was just talking to a client this evening, and it's quite interesting is that every day has been a really, really busy day, because with the various incentives that the government have given and also the attitude of revenue towards what they call compliance checks, that's kind of their word for making sure that you didn't claim something that you shouldn't have claimed, which is not wrong, is that like every day it's just been full on, and lots and lots and lots of, it's probably reasonable to say lots and lots of accountants are probably behind because of this absolutely unrelenting compliance checks by revenue. And, you know, they don't actually say please, they demand, which of course I've had serious problems with, and I've referred it to Pascal Dunhu's office, who's passed it on to a civil servant who has spent time on a 3-page letter explaining to me how important they are and how important it is. And really, at the end of the day, it is just absolutely non-stop for accountants. But anyway, that's our moan.
And you know, and that is almost exacerbated too by, you know, the recent finance bill that was bringing into law a lot of the measures that were outlined in the recent budget. And one, a couple of things in particular, and that's what you're here to talk to us about this evening too, is like especially things like debt warehousing. And this was something that was brought in during COVID to allow companies put some tax debt into a, call it a warehouse, and come back and pay that at a lower interest rate at a suitable time when, you know, businesses were more liquid, customers were back too. Now, interestingly, in the budget, that deadline was extended by 1 year, so it's going to run up until May 2024. But the numbers behind it are quite staggering and maybe even quite scary. And recent statistics published by Revenue show that $2.2 billion, the bulk of the $2.6 billion warehouse debt alone, is warehoused by about 7,500 taxpayers. So quite a huge sum of money that's put away. I know there's schemes and there's incentives there for people to come and try and pay those, but that sounds like an awful lot of money, and pushing it out by a year, is that going to present challenges for a lot of businesses?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's a good thing that they've done. Certainly when COVID came and businesses were running through very difficult times, I suppose really where it comes down to, what do we, I think you have to look at the various tax heads, first of all, before you make a comment on it. The first thing is it refers to VAT, it refers to PAYE, it also refers to overclaims of TWSS, that was the original scheme that was given to employers, and then there's EWSS. It does not cover income tax, and it does not cover corporation tax. The argument for those last two taxes is that they would say, if you're making money, you should pay your taxes. And there's nothing unreasonable about that. So it essentially deals with VAT and PAYE. They're the key taxes. Now, my experience has been, and it's an interesting experience, if I have looked through my 2020 accounts of my clients and my 2021, and I've always maintained this, our government were probably one of the best in certainly Europe and one of the best in the world in how they looked after businesses. And they pretty well subsidized an awful lot of the wage costs and kind of gave lots and lots of room for the various clients to actually maintain the payments, maintain their business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What is, I suppose, the comment is they also maintain businesses that were probably not going to survive anyway. And what we've ended up in is that a number of these businesses are paying corporation tax and they're paying income tax, but they have warehouse debt. Now, does that make sense? And that's one of the anomalies. But in fairness, there's $2.2 billion owing, and Revenue will not forgo that. End of story. And I think they have been reasonable in dealing with it. They've probably been very progressive in terms of how they've done it. So I would be very kind of very positive of how they've approached it. But I do throw that anomaly in. Like, if you're making money and really making money, why haven't you paid your tax?
Is there any indication that there are sectors that are more affected by others and therefore have more of this tax revenue or this tax debt actually warehoused?
Look, I think the hospitality sectors have had a hard time. Despite the CRSS, that was one of those fancy civil servant words to cover overheads. You've had the EWSS, which was, again, another word there to help employers pay their employees, and your TWSS, which was again another one for the same thing. I think employment-related ones has probably caused difficulty because business hasn't been coming in the door. There's also been a crisis in terms of what's happening in Brexit that has not gone away. I think we have a little crisis there, to say the very least, between Ukrainian war, because it is my belief, this is not about Ukraine. This is about destabilizing Europe. So the supply of goods, the whole business that we do within the EU has been pretty well disturbed by the Russian aggression on Ukraine. And this has led to businesses struggling. So, you know, just kind of to come back to your question, yeah, I suppose the hospitality sector has probably found it difficult. Anybody that's been in the business of where they actually have to hold stock for a period of time and then sell it on and carrying the debt in the meantime, they're the businesses, I think, that are suffering.
And of course, Antonis to Leo Varadkar made a comment last week on radio about the hospitality sector and the challenges it may face next year, which was, you know, whilst probably an honest comment, is probably not what people want to hear either, but maybe he's just outlining the potential challenges, because it's been a tough couple of years there and a long way to go too. And And then I suppose you've mentioned things like Brexit and the crisis that has unfolded from that horrific war in Ukraine. And then you add the rising energy crisis or the costs based upon that. And like already over the past week, even on Midlands Today with Will Faulkner, there's been businesses on and some have actually shut their doors. Some are not too far away from doing so. And one thing that was announced in the budget, of course, was the TBESS, that support scheme, the Temporary Business Energy Support Scheme for businesses. Yeah. Now, €1.25 billion was pledged for this. And it was originally planned to cover just case one businesses, such as those involved in trades such as shops, hotels and restaurants. Now, it has been expanded to cover case two businesses. Now, is that when the details of these schemes emerge, then is that suggesting that it's not quite open to all businesses then? And or what have we learned about this scheme since it was first unveiled?
Okay, if we look at it, I think in principle, it is not a bad scheme. The government can't they can't actually wipe away what has actually happened, but they can certainly contribute somewhat to it. And as you say, I attended a roadshow with Pascal O'Donoghue, who I must say isn't even remotely like the caricature that Mario Rosenstock puts forward. I think he's actually. I think he's a very clever guy. I think he thinks very carefully about things. And he ultimately put forward the point that, look, we have to try and assist, but we cannot eliminate all the risks. And essentially, what this scheme is, it deals with electricity and it deals with natural gas. It is tied into what they call case one and case two. Now, for the uninitiated, what that means, there are tax descriptions. Case one is kind of trades, case two are professions. And what they're saying is, look, if you employ people and you're engaging in a trade, they also include in that certain sports bodies who would, let's say, run a bar, but not, let's say, run a sports field, unless it was out for rent. If they ran, now one case that they kind of give an example of would be, if, let's say, there was a pitch where electricity had to be used to light and all that sort of thing, they would certainly give some sort of relief on that. But essentially what it means is that you compare your costs this time last year versus this time this year. If your electricity or your gas has increased by 50%, you're eligible. And what they'll do is they'll give you, in very, very simple terms, 40% of the difference. So if you have your September bill, you compare that against of 2022, you compare that against 2021, you must claim that by January 2023. And it is on a self-assessment basis. So it means if you tell fibs, you're in serious trouble. If you tell the truth, you'll be paid it. And I think in principle, it's a good scheme. How long it can go on, I don't know. And I don't know whether it's the real resolution to the problem. But in the interim, that's what they have done. And they're the very, very simple. Now, there's a 62-page document which can be got on the Revenue website, and it details lots and lots of examples. It details lots of things. For example, let's say a management company that runs an apartment block. They have no ability to claim because they don't trade. So it's quite a detailed document, but it's probably a reasonably fair assistance to business that employs people.
And again, it's not linked towards, and going back to what you mentioned there about the debt warehousing, it's not linked towards if a company is actually paying a corporation tax or is making big profits, they can avail of that scheme.
Okay. What is very interesting, just if we just tip back a little bit for a second to the debt warehousing, is that if you don't, these debts arise in 2021. If you have 2022 tax debt, you can forget it. You either pay those taxes on time, or you're out of they will actually recall all that debt, and they will charge interest, and they will charge penalties, et cetera, whatever is necessary, and they will act on full enforcement. So it's important that if you're going to avail of debt warehousing, you keep your taxes up to date for 2022 onwards, but equally to avail of this TBESS, that's which is basically electricity and gas subsidy, you must have full tax clearance, and they will not give you tax clearance if your taxes are not up to date.
Plenty of work for accountants anyway. John, thank you so much, as always, for your comprehensive knowledge and input into the show on that. And I think in that piece, you've actually both commended and criticised the revenue all at the same time. So I think that there's a sign of you softening, possibly.
Not a chance. Not a chance, Lord. Heaven forbid.
Now,
God, I'm lost.
Now, it's only 8 degrees out there. Go and put on an overcoat over those speedos that you're wearing. But John McCann, MCM Accounting, thank you as always for coming on.
Thanks very much, Ronan.
We'll talk to you again soon. So there you go. Have you started availing of any of those schemes yet, or is it something that you will consider for your business? Again, at large, they seem to be very much welcomed by businesses and by people in the accountancy profession there too, and as genuine support. But as John has pointed out, make sure you keep your current tax year up to date too. You know, it doesn't automatically give you entitlement to kind of warehouse all of your tax debt. Again, think of what John has said there about which types of taxation it's actually linked to, and about some anomalies that can crop up there too. And also, if you go and look at that TBESS, just check all the T's and C's around it as well. Check in with your financial advisors or your CFO before you make that decision. But if those schemes are there, maybe they are worth considering and worth availing. Because if you just Google insolvencies in Ireland and you look at some of the statistics being produced by, say, corporations or companies such as PwC, they're on about cost of business failures that are set to hit about 2 billion in 2022 alone. Now, interestingly, the number of insolvencies predicted for this country, it's something like one every day. I must try and find those stats and come back to it. But actually pales in insignificance almost when you look at what's happening in the UK. They're expecting huge amounts of companies to fold or go under. Which is probably no surprise given what's taking place over there at the minute. But anyway, we will press on here. We'll concentrate on what's happening locally around the Midlands and across the country. Time for a short break. After that, I'll be joined by John Gagan from Mullingar Chamber, and we'll find out exactly what's happening in Mullingar over the past couple of weeks. Stay tuned. Lots to come here on Taking Care of Business. Still to come this evening, are men pulling their weight at home, particularly when children arrive and the family grows a little bit? Is there any discrepancies or disparities between the amount of hours that women are putting in, you know, looking after the house versus what men do? And does it impact on their working hours? Lots of different things to analyse there. Colin Donnery from FRS Recruitment will be along shortly to talk about that. And a little bit later too, we're going to hear from a restaurant owner in the Midlands about rising charges, but also about that crucial thing of if somebody cancels, should the restaurant be entitled, or indeed are they correct to charge the full amount or indeed some amount for that cancelled booking? Because it can have a huge impact on there, particularly if it's a late in the day booking. But before that, I'm going to go across to Mullingar, and my previous guest suggested that he was wearing a pair of Speedos. I reckon this guest is probably in black tie getting ready for a big event on Friday, but we'll come back to that in a few minutes. But I'm joined by John Gagan, the president of Mullingar Chamber, and John is going to talk to us briefly about Centre Parks, which up in Ballymahon, not too far from them there, but the fate of a €100 million expansion of the Centre Parks Holiday Village won't be known until next year after two appeals were lodged with Bord Pleanála in a bid to overturn the planning approval. Now, if you look at some of the stats behind it, what was earmarked in this extension was 198 new lodges, a lakeside restaurant and a coffee shop, along with some extensions to the likes of the subtropical swimming paradise and the Aquasana Spa. Now, the current employee numbers at Centre Parks are around 1,119, and the expansion was expected to add at least another 280 employees. Staggering numbers when you think of job creation and sustainable jobs in the Midlands areas. John, a very good evening to you. You're very close there to Centre Parks up in Ballymahon. What's your own view and the voice of the Chamber in terms of the appeals that have been lodged against the planning for the expansion?
Good evening, Ronan, and thanks for having me on. I suppose the first thing I would say is, look, we in Mullingar are absolutely delighted with the success of Centre Parks. It's unparalleled in Ireland in terms of what it offers as an amenity. And it speaks volumes of Indigenous tourism. I think an awful lot of customers to Centre Parks are Irish people who choose not to fly abroad for holidays. And the price point is at the mid to upper end of the price scale. And it trades very well, and it's full a lot of the time. You know, 90% plus capacity, I believe, is what they're operating at. So we're delighted with Centre Parks nearby Mullingar. And that kind of jars with our disappointment with this current situation, where you have two objectors. I see there were 9 observers on the planning file to extend Centre Parks by €100 million, as you outlined. And it's a weakness in our planning system whereby anyone anywhere can really object to something. And as we understand, and we've been campaigning for years on this at Mullingar Chamber and in business, you know, to make changes to this legislation. And I understand from talking today to a number of people in the planning area that it's very advanced now with draft legislation to be brought to the Dáil to eliminate this nonsense where people with absolutely
no real interest in seeing something happen can block something from happening.
And some of the grounds of the appeal or whatever was that basically the existing infrastructure is under pressure in the area, especially roads and the water supply, but also concerns raised about the proximity of the site to the former Ballymulvey landfill and concerns about the location and condition of asbestos material that might be buried on site too. But as you said, this is something, you know, overall that you've been trying to kind of raise a lot of awareness for in the chamber as well. And I mean, it harps back to things like the Apple project in Athenry from about 4 or 5 years ago and stuff. So, you know, is enough being done, and is it being done quick enough?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, I would say to you, like, they went through a full detailed planning process. So the local authority decided that this is a valid planning application, and the recommendation was to grant it. And like, to my mind, when you look at the process they've got to go through with your environmental impact statements and all the analysis from, you know, the various stakeholders, you know, for the local authority to grant it is a huge thing. But for an individual somewhere, and I see one of the objectors is an entity, and I just googled them there this evening on the company's office, and I can't see them. I don't see them online as a company or as a registered charity or any other entity. And I think it's outrageous these guys can block 100 million euros of investment in our areas, particularly when the reasons they're given are frankly ridiculous.
And of course, those reasons you would assume in any planning application, they would have to be covered in terms of, you know, the environmental impact assessment, etc. So whatever concerns may have been there, the fact it's on an existing site too, and it's an extension of what's already been there, and as you said, has proved to be very successful, I'm sure increases the frustration.
It does, and it's a nationwide problem, and it gives Ireland a bad reputation internationally. Like you mentioned, the Apple situation, that's right. You know, it looks really bad for us globally. But I would say to you, I understand there's advanced legislation being drafted on this to be brought forward by Minister Peter Burke, our local minister here, and they're going to go through this, whereby the third party, I think, will have to object at the early stage in the planning process. So their concerns can be dealt with very early on, a bit like the UK. And then after that, the third party cannot object, which I think is fair to the person who lodges for planning and spends maybe €1 million or €2 million applying for planning in this situation.
Yeah, because it in turn will have a huge knock-on effect on FDI too, because anybody watching, you say, if you start Googling kind of planning appeals in this country, you do come across a lot of cases where there have been appeals and appeals been upheld, and it may not present the best picture. So it's quite interesting. While it's a very valid process, there has to be some grounds for appeal, obviously, on these. You know, do you get those concerns expressed as President of the Chamber from other companies around the area?
Yeah, I mean, look, companies are reluctant to come into Ireland because of the planning legislation. And in fairness to the IDA, like, they build the units now to give advanced building solutions to occupiers. And a lot of the medtech companies have to actually have the built building before the company will look at coming here, you know, because they're just afraid of the planning legislation. But like I said, I think Peter Brook's department is doing enormous work on this, and they will tidy it up. And the peculiarity that seems to be just here in Ireland should be gone in the next 12 months. And I would really welcome that. I think it unlocks a lot of value in our economy. And if you look at Centre Parks being delayed for a year, I reckon it's costing Ireland €1 million a month, you know, to delay 100 million of investment.
Yeah, so actually, it says that, that I think an estimate has been put on it. If it was opened, the new capacity at Longford Forest was estimated to lead to an increase of about €27 million per annum to Irish GDP. Again, significant numbers. Yeah. And I'd say many listeners would be very surprised to hear that there's almost 1,200 people working there at present too. So I suppose it's always that thing. It's that knock-on effect of one, you know, one business or one event can have a huge impact around the surrounding areas. And I'm going to segue nicely to something else here now, because I mentioned Black Tie at the start as well, and we know when some of certain events are held, it has a knock-on effect for, you know, the clothing stores and for dress hire companies around the area too. Have you got your tux ready for Friday night?
Well, look, thank God the tux doesn't need to come out, because we moved away to kind of smart casual instead of tux as the dress code for Friday night. And I'm delighted to say, we've over 400 people booked to come to Mullingar Friday night for our annual awards dinner. For the first time in nearly a decade, we're having a get-together in Mullingar, and I absolutely can't wait. It should be brilliant.
You have, as well as your guest list, you have some very special guests coming down to you on the night.
Well, look, we're over the moon to have Pascal Donoghue, the Minister for Finance and the Chair of the European Banking Group, as our guest speaker. We couldn't have asked for a better person, given the times we're living in and the situations we're going through with Brexit and our own economy and the Ukrainian war. You know, we're thrilled to have him. And the night is sponsored by the Erdona Group, who's located an office in Mullingar in the last couple of years. And we have a small kind of a facilitated discussion panel around the economy and regional development, which will be chaired by Joan Mulvihill, and should be a frank and firm discussion around the various issues we're dealing with in the Midlands. Can't wait. It should be a good night and a bit of crack. We have Taobh na Mara, the All-Ireland Ceilidh Band winners, are playing in the lobby that night. And we have the Cronin Brothers, the Afters Band, for the music afterwards.
Sounds like a fantastic night lined up as well. And definitely, you know, it's award season at the minute too, when lots of different award ceremonies happening, and people seem to be really embracing that opportunity, or, you know, getting out and that chance to celebrate too. And I suppose trying to keep a bit of positivity when there's a lot of potential negativity out there behind the scenes. But John, listen, all the very best, and keep up the great work there in Mullingar. And no doubt we'll talk to you very soon here on Taking Care of Business.
Thanks, Ronan. Thanks, mate. Take care. Good night.
That's it. So again, on Friday night as well, actually, the Laois Chamber Awards are taking place in the Heritage in Killinard. And again, a big event is planned there. Lots of nominations for, I think, over 400 or 500 nominations for people all around the county. And those awards will be given out this Friday night. We'll have a little bit more on other awards taking place before the show is out too. So time for a quick break now. After that, we're going to touch on that topic of men pulling their weight at home and actually assisting around the house. Have men been getting away with it for far too long now? Well, statistics from around 2018, 2019 suggest that when women are working and when they have children, the amount of hours they can actually commit to work drops significantly. For men, there was almost no change. So the big question is, have all the new working habits we've adopted since 2020 and the whole working from home and all that, have they actually made a difference, and are we seeing things change? And indeed, what can be done from an organisational leadership perspective to change that? Well, Colin Donnery of FRS Recruitment will talk about that after this quick break. Still to come here on Taking Care of Business, we'll look at that issue of cancellations for restaurants, and indeed ask the question, should restaurants be allowed to charge you the full whack if you cancel quite late in the day? It has such a knock-on and obviously devastating impact. So later, you're going to hear from a Midlands restaurant owner who has quite an interesting kind of theory, and probably might enlighten you too, around the costs around operating a restaurant, and that sometimes why, when you're paying more for a meal, the restaurant may actually be making less of a margin. Now, it sounds completely, a complete contradiction, but find out a little bit more on that in about 10 or 15 minutes' time. But staying closer to home, and indeed to the home kitchen and the household in general, and the whole, the change it makes in people's lives when, if they're a couple or married couple, whatever it is, and children arrive into the household, it can have a huge impact. I mean, anybody who is ferrying children around and even just trying to mind and look after children knows it can be challenging trying to balance a busy working life around that and trying to progress in your career or maybe study or whatever else it might be. But a lot of research has shown, and indeed continues to show, that it has a bigger impact on the working hours of women when children arrive than men. And effectively what that means is, and this was based on a survey that was done in the UK and published in 2018, that if a man's typical working hours of a certain age, maybe when he's from about maybe 30 to about 40, 45, if you plot the average working hours of your typical man and then plot the same hours when the children arrive into the family, those hours remain relatively unchanged. However, if you look from the female perspective, the women's hours often drop drastically. And even further research from the EU has shown that, you know, more women with children are unemployed and indeed find it harder to get back into work. So this isn't something new either. This kind of employment, gender employment gap has existed for quite a while. And FRS Recruitment CEO Colin Donnery tweeted about this over the weekend too. And he kind of started off by saying that it's amazing that there's been no progress on this since the 1980s. So the big question is, has the changing work habits that we've adopted, or many of us have adopted since the first lockdown and the onset of the pandemic, has it changed any of this? And are those figures likely to change? But firstly, Colin, is this something that you're seeing? I mean, you're dealing with people day in, day out. You're constantly trying to match people with the right roles, the right companies, with the right people. And, you know, a lot of stuff has to align in that. Is this a real challenge, do you think? And is it still something that is not changing and hasn't changed in a couple of decades?
Yeah, thanks, Ronan. So it's definitely, if it's changing relatively slowly. And really where it starts is on, I suppose, what they call the gender pay gap, right? But if you look at the gender pay gap, it's not really a gender pay gap. It's a motherhood pay gap. So typically what happens, and you look at it and you plot males and females, they match each other. Look, women would be probably about 5% lower than men until they hit about 28 years of age, right? And then they sort of drop off the side of the cliff, right? So the pay gap becomes, goes to about 20, 25%, right? And that's typically because women have children, right? They take time back from the work, and that impacts on their promotional sort of aspirations, pay, particularly advancement, training, literally everything, right? So that's your sort of starting point. What I think you sort of touched on it there, participation rates in Ireland are one and have been one of the worst in Europe amongst women for years, and it's a bit of a hangover from the 70s when we made women give up jobs, particularly in the public sector. So that's there. And what we're starting to see now is, if you think about what happens, and that, survey or research on, when a family has children, it has no effect on the men in terms of the hours they work, and has a drastic and dramatic effect on women. So what we're seeing now in the world of remote work is, it's all been pushed back onto the women. So, if you look at what women want, they want more flexibility. But the question is that flexibility to try and juggle, parenting, which invariably I'd say a lot of it is, but is that sort of the solution? I think organizations who want to, grow a flexible workforce need to sort of tackle this head on and really, really support women around this. But I suppose there's a bigger, deeper, probably more difficult question, and it's always a challenge, to say, are women doing enough for themselves? Are they pushing the men hard enough to sort of come home and take up the slack, really,
It's really interesting to hear you say that with all the changes to lifestyle and working habits through the pandemic, that actually it hasn't changed and possibly may have even got worse for it there. So when it comes down to it then, I suppose, firstly, from a recruiter's perspective, the way job specs are now compiled and advertised, has that changed since the pandemic? Because what we're constantly hearing is it's all about hybrid work. If you don't have hybrid work or have it as an option, people aren't going to apply for jobs with you. Is that true? Has that been borne out?
Okay, so Indeed had research last week, right, just last week. So advertised remote and hybrid jobs are falling, right, and falling relatively dramatically, and particularly in the last 4 or 5 months. And they're down at now 14%. During the pandemic, they were up at about 22%, I think they got up to, but they're falling quite rapidly. But interestingly, over 52% of applications on Indeed are for these 14% of flexible stroke hybrid stroke remote working roles. So that's telling us people are screaming out for this sort of stuff, but organizations are starting to really pull back from that, and are trying to get people back to the office. And that's what they're seeing. And look, we had a conference a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of the research is showing that it's, I suppose, managers that are trying to get people back because they feel they can't manage people remotely. And look, there is evidence to show that people, in general, productivity is down, so people are looking and going, but I think people are blaming the worker, at home too much, rather than looking at the management system they have. A lot of these organizations, are stuck in, old management systems, which are set up really for office-based, management, when they need to be looking at management systems that are set up for hybrids, And individuals themselves, have really great difficulty with that. We actually sent a lot of our internal managers to the leash of the ETB around it with Grow Remote on managing remote employees. And actually, they did courses as well for the workers themselves and how to be more efficient working remotely. But I think in terms of job specs, yes, we're seeing lots of change in that, but that we are in this sort of, it's a bit of a push and pull scenario with workers, really looking for that flexibility. And I think it will be a terrible shame if we gave up all all that sort of we learned during the pandemic around, you know, working remotely and how we shifted to that so quickly and so successfully.
So when it comes to a company like FRS and even some of your sister companies, how do you then become leaders in that sphere and show that, look, your company is going to be more open to this and to almost help address that gender gap that exists in workplaces? Not suggesting it's happening in years, but how can companies take the lead on this?
Yeah, look, I think in terms of the remote, like all of our, we've what's called a flexible force policy in our recruitment business in FRS Recruitment, which means effectively people can work from wherever they want, whether that be an office, you know, from home or, you know, a hub or whatever it is. But we do try and get them together pretty regularly and one of the things we try and do is not bring people together just to do the work in the office that they would do when they're at home. So get them together for things like brainstorming, you know, creativity, workshops, etc. Because those things are very difficult to do when you're working remotely. So it's important, I think, that we do that. In terms of, I suppose, you know, promoting sort of women, you know, and gender and that, like, diversity is one of our key values in the organization. And I think really having a diverse workforce, you know, definitely helps, you know, in terms of productivity and success and, you know, and trying to help, you know, like give those people a leg up along the way is really, really critical, you know, for us.
Yeah, and I think, I suppose, as you reach out into a range of different companies as well, there are undoubtedly still kind of stigmas and biases that exist around women entering the workforce, and particularly if, you know, there's a thought that she may leave now on maternity leave as well, and how are we going to fill that gap? But it's going to take a while to change those. I mean, it's staggering. You mentioned that it's only since the 1970s that women haven't been compelled legally to give up work in the civil service if they got married. Like, it's not that far back that stuff like that was happening. So, but again, maybe with the pace of change lately, maybe something can be done about this a lot quicker, because ultimately, it's not just a benefit really for the organisation. There's a wider community benefit if we can get, you know, more flexibility, more fluidity in the working day to allow more people to be more engaged with their local communities. Is that a fair point?
Oh, totally. I think, look, we've certainly seen, you know, locally, even in places like Laois, you know, in a traffic hub there in Portlaoise and right around the place, people getting home, you know, and working in their local communities. It's just been fantastic, I think, for those. And right across the country, it's a real rural, it's brought life back, I think, to a lot of towns, you know. And I think on the, you know, when you look, we still have this problem really with, you know, women, particularly in leadership, not getting those roles. You know, like it's staggering to think only 26% of all C-suites, you know, in the C-suite are women, you know. And but where that really, and that there's a really good report out from McKinsey this month on that and why that's happening, is back way down the chain. That first rung on the ladder, women are still getting overlooked for management positions, you know, when they're in their early stage careers, you know, organizations. And that can come down to women not pushing themselves forward. We know from research that women don't push themselves forward for roles as much as men, you know. So there's no real silver bullet to this, I think, as a solution. There's lots of things, you know, that we can be doing as organizations, that men can be doing, you know, that the government can be doing. I'm not a big fan of quota systems, but I think potentially there's some type of thing they can do maybe that can help. But really, we just need to give women the confidence to put themselves forward and, you know, for these sort of, you know, more senior roles and get them there. It definitely helps. Look, it's proven, you know, more women leaders in your C-suite and in your board is going to make you more successful companies. Really simple if we can get to that.
And I'd be kind of, I nearly hate to mention it, like, but if we look at even world politics lately and look at the effect that one man in Russia can have, and indeed an individual in the US who refused to accept results of elections, And we see something similar emerging from Brazil overnight, where a defeated candidate has refused to actually acknowledge that he was beaten, even despite the fact that some of his senior ministers are saying, you know, you were beaten in this election, you know, accept it and move on. It doesn't really bode well for allowing sometimes males to be at the very top of an organisation without some levels of checks and balances. But Colin, I suppose the big question on all this is, you have a big family by modern standards there too, so how much work do you do around the house? Do you pull your weight?
Another way, I'm into AI and robots, so I bought one of these robot hoovers, and that is absolutely fantastic. So
it's always technology. You can't just replace people with machines, Colin. We all know that anyway. So there you go. That's the advice of the group chief executive from FRS, Colin Donnery. Just buy your robotic hoover and you can reach the pinnacle of your career then. Colin, thanks as always for your input, and we'll talk to you again very soon. There you go. You're learning it all here on Taking Care of Business this evening. It's that simple, isn't it? Stay tuned after the break. Have you ever had to cancel a restaurant at short notice? And you've probably just cancelled it and said, that's grand. At least I've been polite and not actually, you know, not showed up. But if you rang to cancel and then you found out you were still subsequently charged for the reservation, would you be happy with that? Would you be content? Is that fair? After a break, find out the views of a Midlands restaurant owner on that very matter. Imagine booking that romantic meal for two, then all of a sudden discovering that for whatever circumstances you had to cancel it at short notice. You ring the restaurant, you cancel the meal, and the next day you discover that actually you've been charged the full whack for the meal. That happened to a couple recently down in Kinsale. They were charged €250 for a meal that they never had. But is the restaurant in that instance entitled to actually charge you that? Well, the restaurant had a cancellation policy. They said it was all there in plain sight for people to see. But needless to say, there's been a lot of reaction, a lot of it negative, online and indeed in media, to the incident. So earlier today, Will Faulkner caught up with Ray Byrne, the owner of the Wineport Lodge in Glasson in Athlone, to discuss this issue like from the sector at large, and see, is that something that should be brought in? And Ray began actually by talking about, you know, the misconceptions about the pricing on menus, that sometimes when you're paying quite a high price for something, the margin for the restaurant could be quite low. Here's what Ray had to say today in conversation with Will.
Well, like, it isn't that difficult, really. But I would preface the discussion by saying, you know, that, you know, and we might go into it some day with more time, just bear in mind, and the listeners might be interested to hear this, and they might be surprised to hear this, That typically in the restaurant business, the more you pay for your dinner as a customer, the less money the restaurant makes.
Right, that sounds odd.
Sounds odd, but, you know, again, there's a long history of it, and it's all to do with, you know, if you have the linen cutlery and the Newbridge crystal and all those things, or the Newbridge silverware and all those things on the table, and more waiters and more chefs, and the costs are higher, and the expectation is greater naturally for the customer because they pay more money, and there's wine from seven continents in the cellar. It all costs more. You end up doing less covers, and as a result, the guy who's next door who has a restaurant that doesn't have, say, cutlery or crockery is actually making a lot more money.
Everybody should be running a chipper in that case.
Don't tell everyone.
Right. Okay, so bearing in mind this restaurant probably running on slim enough margins.
Yes.
If they lose a booking, it makes a big dent in their takings for the night, more so than perhaps a smaller restaurant.
Yeah, and I just think of that phrase from the restaurant's point of view, you would have sympathy for them, but I suppose the issue is, you know, when you're explaining you're losing to a degree. So, you know, if it was a U2 concert and the couple were in the hospital and said, oh, we have our tickets for the concert, you know, if you rang up U2's management and said, listen, we're not sure we can make it because we're in the hospital. You know, you would get short shrift. So really the restaurant are slightly at fault because they need to explain that cancellation thing better, and they need to sell their seat as if they're selling a ticket for a performance. It's Michelin star. It's, you know, they're putting a lot of work into it. The husband and wife, they're sourcing the produce. They're there in the kitchen all day. And then the show, the show starts at 8 o'clock and the customers arrive in. So, you know, the restaurant should really say, listen, you can buy it, you know, a ticket or a seat. It'll cost you £250 for the two of you, and you pay up front, and thanks very much. And if you don't turn up, you don't turn up.
Maybe this is unfair, but it reminds me of Ryanair. So if you book to fly with Ryanair, you accept you're going to get no frills, maybe not the best customer service. That's part of the deal. But if you book with a more expensive airline, you expect a bit more sympathy, a bit more hand-holding, whatever you need. And maybe people feel the same towards restaurants, that if it's high-end, there should be that bit of grace that you wouldn't get in the bargain basement.
Sure, and like that is a fair point, and people do pay those exorbitant, you know, business price tickets, and they can be cancelled and rebooked at short notice. And, you know, maybe it's a leaf that the restaurant industry could take out of its book and say, well, listen, we're charging you, you know, 400 quid for that dinner. But if you cancel, it's not a problem.
Mm.
And, you know, and you can book again.
Certainly going to be an interesting topic to debate as well. Would you be happy to do that too? And of course, I think what stems from it all is just saying it's the policy may not be transparent enough for a lot of people. Be clear about it. Look at the service you're delivering and see what you can do. Think that in mind when you go to book a restaurant the next time and think about what they have to go through and what they have to face as well. God knows it's been a tough couple of years. Stay safe. I'll talk to you all next week.